do not congratulate was this week.
Yeah, that's right.
Just a few days ago.
I'm kind of regretting not doing a news dump because that's what keeps me sort of.
Yeah, I know. With it being an election week, a lot of bets are off. So
yeah,
let's just.
All right, ready to dive in?
I'm going to eat a grape because there's grapes on my desk for some reason from yesterday.
Do I dare to eat a peach, honey?
You dared the other day. Oh, ho!
Oh, ho, ho. Now, for our listeners out there, what is that line from?
J. Alfred Prufrock.
Very, very good. That lady right down in front, she gets her peach eaten for that one. Bring that peach up here. Let's have a...
All this is staying in the podcast.
Yeah, of course. This is the money shit. The politics is just entirely unnecessary at this point. You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 23rd, 2018. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from just fired before you're even hired Friday, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Or I quit because I just found out what the job is.
Yeah. Oh, I did what now? I got hired to do what now? I was going to paint your fence. No. Got to go in and defend me as a lawyer. Job at which you suck. Your job is to sit on Fox News set in your 1980s, Gambino family outfit and talk with kind of law speak about why Donald Trump's getting abused by all these goddamn liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned out one day you actually have to bring your law degree to work and do some legal shit. It's like, oh, I don't think this is the job for me. I'd rather go back over there with Napolitano and opine about shit, getting the mani-pedis from Laura Ingraham.
See?
That's what I want for my life.
See?
It was Mr. DiGiovannisi is his name. I don't remember it because he won't be around that long. But it isn't a rat leaving a sinking ship. It's a rat literally halfway up the rat line to the ship, realizing, oh, this is bad. And turning around and slowly backing away from it, which is not a sign of confidence. Although he did accomplish the one thing he was quote-unquote hired to do, which was so badly scare the shit out of John Dowd that John Dowd quit. So, yay.
Driftless, I want to mention something before we actually even get started with anything in the podcast.
Wow.
I want to say something. First of all, I want to say Austin Strong. Our thoughts are with everyone who lost lives in the bombings that happened this week. Indeed. In Austin, Texas. There is a meeting tonight in Austin. If you are listening to this before 7 p.m., from 7 to 9, at the Moore Hancock Farmstead, 4811 Sinclair Avenue in Austin, Texas. It is a bridges meeting to bridge the divide, to bring people together, and support Democratic candidate Tawana Cadian for Congress.
Ooh, woohoo, yeah.
In Texas 10. And this is our gal, and we're allowed to use her real name now, Tammy. Tammy is Lady Theolo GOP and on Twitter. And she is an activist working very hard to get Tawana Cadian elected to the Congress. And Tawana is going to be in a runoff, but she's the one. And she is – it's a beautiful sign. If you have a chance to go, you'll see it at Theolo GOP's Twitter stream. There's a picture of Tawana Cadian standing at the entrance of the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And it's about the vote, and it's about making change, and we're going to be talking about all that this week. But if you're in Austin, I wanted to get that out right away. Uh-huh. Listen to the podcast later. Tonight, Friday, March 23rd, go to the Moore Hancock Farmstead, look at the butterflies, enjoy some camaraderie with fellow liberals, and support a Democrat who's going to Congress.
Uh-huh.
All right. Let's get back to where the good Lord split you.
Yeah. We pause in our word from our sponsor to move on to a word from our fake sponsor.
Yeah. Well, and we are sponsoring them. Let me put it this way. No one's paying us to promote congressional candidates who are progressives. No. We are happy to do that.
But we do want to disclose the fact that that Tammy built our website for us.
She did. And, so we owe her big time, and we love her.
Ass off. And if she had blown in a call saying, you know what, there's this really boffo NRA-approved Republican congressman I really want you to get behind, we would have lost her phone number and burned the phone and never spoken to
her. She wouldn't work on our website so hard.
No. The point being that unlike so many other sponsored podcasts, we actually use the products and know the people that we promote.
Right.
And when they're real. When they're not real, we're not as familiar with their business plan.
Yeah, but there sure is a business plan over at the Where the Good Lord Split You Emergency Farewell Party Supplies. They are ready for you.
They are just hanging and banging over there.
The White House is keeping them busy 24/7, 365, I tell you.
They have, I think, Corning, the glassware company, used to have this three-mile-long conveyor belt. and that's now all sheet cake.
All sheet cake. And some of them say farewell, and some of them say you're fired.
You're fired. Some of them say, welcome to the White House. And if you tilt it slightly, it's a hologram. It also says, you're fired.
You're fired, or please quit, or I quit.
And some of them say, please get me out of here.
Yeah,
and some of them contain little messages and files.
A file.
Please, for God's sakes, make it stop. And our question, as always, is, just show us the gun that is being held to your head that makes you work there.
Yeah.
None of these assholes have to work there. It is now actually actively toxic to have this White House on your resume, which
even the amazing thing.
Yeah. I've never heard of that. I have never.
When you're a lawyer, it's toxic.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And if you look around, this is how bad it is. People down to the intern level don't want to mention that they worked in the...
Yeah.
Now, think about this. 80% of everyone you see on an op-ed page or on television or on the radio are all Bush regime dead-enders, are all clowns who were 100% behind George Bush, who carried water for George Bush, who backed the Iraq War, who got their careers a big boost by calling people like you and me traitors and liars and un-American and scumbags. None of those people have ever suffered any adverse consequences for being the staff to and supporters of the worst president in history up until now. Because it's a solid goal of luck. It doesn't matter how shitty the president is or how awful the administration is or how big a liar you were, Bill Kristol, when you were supporting them, or how many horrible words you stuffed in their mouth, David Frum and Michael Gerson, of these war criminals and monsters. There was always going to be a really good job waiting for you at the end of the rainbow. That is just not true anymore. And that's amazing to me. That is absolutely amazing. And entirely long overdue. Frankly, long overdue. If you work for Donald Trump, you are a horrible person. You are a horrible, horrible person. As we saw this week with the appointment of John Bolton, where they just said, fuck it, let's just go with anybody who's one degree from Pam Geller.
Yep.
That's who we're shooting for. We want the craziest ass Islamophobic, bomb everyone, let God sort them out, freak show from the dregs of the right-wing blogosphere circa 2006. That's who the fuck we want.
All right, I have a question for you, Driftglass.
Sure.
Would Jeb Bush have put John Bolton in that position?
Probably not.
I don't think so. I think it really is that, first, number one, Trump believes that John Bolton and Fox News are real.
Yeah, he's...
That's real policy and real analysis.
Yeah.
And number two... he's scraping the bottom of the barrel for people to work there.
I don't know that he is, though. I think that he thinks that John Bolton's a genius.
Yeah, because he's on Fox.
But it's like the Ronco presidency, you know, as seen on TV. Whoever the hell you see trotted on stage, oh my crap, that asshole has his own show. That person was on Fox. That person was on The Apprentice. It really is just a bunch of telemarketed human products now being given access to the nation's most sensitive intelligence, the nation's most insensitive secrets, actual real power, all led by a racist moron madman. And that's where we are now. This is where we now live. And That's why the election this last week in Illinois especially was incredibly important in terms of bellwether and just sorting out where things are, and why paying attention to this is really important, and marching, whenever you get the chance to march, especially on the 24th, is terribly important. It's looking like there might be a complete flip of Congress.
Yeah.
And the minute that happens, weird things are going to start to happen. Because there's going to be this interim, this lame duck Congress interim, where all the people who have been running cover for this war criminal, racist lunatic, are going to have to decide what to do with the rest of their lives.
Right.
And you're going to see, like, the final... This would be, like, the last reel of downfall. I predict a lot of papers being thrown out of balconies and bonfires burning. And just burn all the fucking records. Devin Nunes running around just setting fire to everything. Destroy everything. Don't let him find it. Because the minute Democrats get sworn in, I don't care how it looks, because how it looks is how it should be. If the Democrats take the House, especially, the Intel Committee needs to start prosecuting Devin Nunes.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to start prosecuting their own members, because these guys are absolutely complicit up to their sweaty upper lips. I want to see Jason Chaffetz haul back in irons and people who have contempt, who express contempt for Congress or guilty of contempt of Congress, and get a slap on the wrist from the Republican Congress, need to go to jail under the Democrats. No, I vividly remember Nancy Pelosi saying, you know, impeachment's off the table. Impeachment.
Yeah.
Just, what the fuck, Nancy, really? I know you have other business you want to get on to, but the most important business of the country right now, I think we've learned from the experience of the Bush administration, is you have to drown the Republican Party in a bathtub. You can't leave any of them left upright and moving. The whole party has to be burned to the ground, because if you leave any of them up, if you leave any seedlings in the ground, they will grow
back.
You'll
have John Bolton back in the White House.
Exactly. They'll grow back like fucking kudzu, and they'll be back in 2 years, and they'll be worse, because they have never learned the lesson. And that's because no one has ever broken their back. No one has ever rubbed their nose in their shit. They have been allowed to get away with one atrocity after another.
And change to the Tea Party or rebrand themselves as No Labels or whatever it is.
And now it's...
Well, Drift Glass, you know, first of all, the John Bolton thing has gotten people really scared.
Well, it should.
And I have taken the attitude the moment I heard this, that we don't at the individual level have any control over whether a bomb drops on us today or not.
Nope.
So you might as well laugh. And I'm going to treat the John Bolton appointment for the joke that it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it as a joke, because it is a joke.
Well, it's theater of the absurd. Yeah.
It is theater of the absurd.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I tweeted yesterday, something to the effect of, you know, SNL thought they were really cute making the Evil Dead black cloaked satanic death character.
Yeah.
Steve Bannon.
Yeah,
they've run that out. That was good. Bolton can't be that, right? Yeah. They're going to have to find some other costume for the Bolton character. But I did want to read this letter from LS, who wrote us this week, who sent us $5. And said, this is in honor of my dad, who we learned at tonight's dinner is a newly minted independent.
Yay. He's an independent.
He thinks politics is ugly, and there's no one taking the middle road and telling the truth.
So sad. So very sad.
Thank you, professional left. Thanks to you, I saw it coming.
Yeah.
He's had an R next to his voting habits for 20 years.
Yep.
Now, he's my dad. He's a sweet man. We love him, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But because he's my dad and he's sweet and we love him, that's the only reason I didn't shout, burn the lifeboats. Mm-hmm. So it is sad to be right about these things.
Yeah.
You know, we're sorry that we're right, but you're going to see more and more of this. You're going to see people saying, well, no, I've abandoned politics for country music.
Yeah.
Or, you know, all of them are just terrible. I'm washing my hand of the whole thing rather than, wow, I was wrong. Because saving face is what it's all about.
Yes.
Yes.
If I may quote, Mr. David Brooks from today, literally from today, in a column entitled "Speaking as a White Male."
Oh Lord.
In which he says, when he started, it was very important for opinion writers never to think of themselves as Republican or Democrat. Oh my God, I have bored feet of David Brooks' columns in which he absolutely does nothing but carry water for the worst Republican president in history and slander the shit out of Democrats. So fuck you, David Brooks. But his columns are all the same. And eventually they always come around to this. This is the quote. If it's just group against group, deliberation is a sham. Beliefs are just masks groups use to preserve power structures, and democracy is a fraud. The epistemological foundation of our system is in surprisingly radical flux. You see, it's just group against group, Blue Gal. It's just blocks against blocks. There's no actual distinction between anything. They're all bad. Every group is bad. They're all equally bad. And that's what David Brooks would like our reader's father to know.
Yep.
The whole system is bad. You don't need to worry about it because everything's ugly. Everything's bad. Everything's the exact same shade of shitty beige. And nothing matters except finding a nice center position between two things that I don't want to talk about because it scares the shit out of me to have to make a moral judgment about anything. And that is where our politics are going to be unless we on the left demand otherwise.
Well, and reality comes right up against that, because the reality of people's health insurance bills comes right up against that. The reality of failing schools comes right up against that. And realizing that Betsy DeVos is the one responsible for improving education in America, or is the spokesperson for education in America for that administration. And, it's not real. What he is talking about, as usual, is a fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to our other fake sponsor, Drip Glass.
Yes.
Occam's Razor Club.
Yes.
Why is John Bolton the new National Security Director? Occam's Razor Club gives you a clean, close shave and the simplest answer. Like his entire political party, President Stupid thinks Fox News is real.
Yeah, it's not that complicated. It's really, really not that complicated. They're stupid, brainwashed livestock, just like President Stupid all the way down to your crazy Uncle Liberty. They're all the same person. They all think the same way. They all watch the same shit, and they all have to believe this stuff. They have to, because if it turns out they're wrong, they have nothing. Their entire life is a sham. Their entire religion, their entire cult falls apart. So that's why I, on this podcast, every now and then bring up emails I get from the same people over and over and over again over years, who just won't stop crawling back belly first to liars and listening to the new lie. They can't be saved. There's nothing. I mean, I'm pretty good with words, Blue Gal. I'm pretty proficient. I'm pretty forgiving in person. I don't, rail on people. I do it on this podcast, but I don't fire and brimstone people in person. But I have never been able to make the slightest dent at all in their belief structure. It doesn't matter. I can go back and bring in 50 old emails. This is a lie. This is a lie. This is a lie. Why do you keep going back to liars? And the answer is always the same. Well, both sides are bad.
Right.
Both sides are bad. They are not salvageable human beings anymore. And we have to. We can treat them as relatives and barbecue partners and people who we pick up our kids together. And we care about
in terms of political debate and participation in an engaged political structure.
Stop.
You can't do it.
Stop trying to deal with these people on a rational level. You cannot do it. Start.
All right, but Drift Glass, I have another question for you.
Sure.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No. I got off on a
people get mad at me for interrupting you, but I have this is a question.
Yes.
Twice this week, I have seen it, and I'm sure it's happened multiple times, where Fox is going on and arguing a specific point, and it conflicts with not only with the Democratic Party, et cetera, but conflicts with the reality that the White House, the supposed leadership in the White House, has to deal with. So there is a reality that Trump wants massive increase in defense spending. He wants massive increases in infrastructure spending, he says. The House puts together a spending bill that with which certain members of the Trump White House are participating in the negotiations and the math.
Right.
Fox News sees the numbers and cannot jibe the numbers with cutting spending because it's not. And the tax cut bill that everybody's supposed to just forget about now because that's over.
Right. Never happened.
Is creating this humongous deficit.
Sure.
And I know that we have readers and listeners who are far more intelligent about budgets and deficits and so forth than we are and have, you know, really very strong philosophies about
very informed opinions about
very informed, very, very informed economic opinions about, look, we're just paying ourselves back with the deficit. I get that.
Right.
But what I'm talking about is the zeitgeist of our society and how we talk about deficits and that average Joe sees deficits as bad.
Well, and specifically, the people that you are talking about are hysterical about deficits when there's a Democrat in the White House. This is not my belief.
Right.
This is your. It is like watching absolute hardcore professed Catholics,
right?
Who will lecture you all day long about the nuances of Catholicism and you're going to hell, inviting Donald Trump to come to their church.
Right.
He gets up in the pulpit. He wipes his ass with the Bible. He picks his teeth with the cross. He drinks the wine, pours it on the ground, takes a shit, and walks away. And they're just cool with that.
Right.
Like, well, wait a minute. He just defiled everything you said. Not me. You said you believe all this shit. And the answer is, So what?
Well, he got us Gorsuch.
Right.
He didn't get you Gorsuch. You stole a seat.
Right.
And he put Gorsuch in it to make you happy.
And that's okay with them.
But getting back to this, so so we're talking about the deficit not as a real thing and not as an important thing and not as a matter of economic debate. We're talking about it as a political cudgel, okay?
Right.
And Fox News freaks out and blames Democrats.
Sure. Of course.
Fox and Friends, the crotch couch, is in there, oh gosh, the Democrats just want to spend so much money, it's terrible. Donald Trump, whose people have gone and negotiated this very specific spending bill for him to sign, and it has passed out of a Republican House and a Republican Senate, and is on his desk to sign as a Republican president, and all of a sudden Donald Trump watches Fox and doesn't want to sign it anymore.
Right, tweets that he maybe I'm not going to sign it.
Maybe I won't sign it because and everyone loses their shit because the government's going to shut down tonight.
Right.
And everybody has to get out of town today because the March for Our Lives is coming tomorrow.
Yes, and they don't want to be around for that.
And the Democrats in the House held a ceremony welcoming the Parkland students to Washington, D.C. This morning. But every Republican in Congress is out of town. The so-called president is going to Mar-a-Lago today.
Play golf.
Nobody who has any NRA connections wants to be anywhere near this because it's going to be bigger than Trump's inaugural.
So what's your question, Blue Gal?
Well, here's my question. So Trump did that. That is a point at which he watched Fox and Fox was against what his administration was doing.
Right.
So he tweets, I'm with Fox, not I'm with my own administration.
Yes.
He did that 2 days ago. Maybe even yesterday. Time is just gone for me.
Yeah.
Lou Dobbs was bent out of shape because Arizona has to give driver's licenses to DACA recipients.
Right. Okay.
So same thing. He tweets, I agree with Lou Dobbs.
Sure.
Well, his own attorneys, the government attorneys from the White House, were saying DACA's up in the air. This is one state. This is I mean, they didn't say this out loud, but this is a bigoted executive order from Jan Brewer.
Right. That's what it is.
That we do not have time to fight in the Supreme Court over. We're not going to push this.
Right.
But Lou Dobbs' hair is on fire. So there's Trump tweeting, oh, yeah, I'm with Lou Dobbs. I think the Supreme Court should be forced to listen to this case. Well, okay. We have – at what point does Fox then have to break down?
I will tell you.
Yeah.
I will tell you by reading a quote that is not from The West Wing or from David Brooks. May I?
You're going to give me opportunity to talk about why I hate The West Wing today, right?
Absolutely. All the running room you need. Here's a quote. The power of holding two contradictory beliefs in one's mind simultaneously and accepting both of them. Mm-hmm. To tell deliberate lies while genuinely believing in them. To forget any fact that has become inconvenient, and then when it becomes necessary again to draw it back from oblivion for just as long as it's needed to deny the existence of objective reality, and all the while taking account of the reality which one denies, all of this is indispensably necessary. Even in using the words doublethink, it is necessary to exercise doublethink. For using the word, one admits that one is tampering with reality. By a fresh act of doublethink, one erases this knowledge, and so mm-hmm. on indefinitely, yeah. with the lie always one leap ahead of the truth. These are Orwellian sock puppets.
Mm-hmm.
They do not think like we think, Blue Gap.
Okay.
Their brains don't function the way our brains function anymore. They can believe literally in the morning one thing, in the afternoon something the exact opposite, and they will not remember they said it, and if you bring it up, they'll call you a liar, and if you show them the tape, they'll say both sides, and they'll move on. They don't function like normal human beings anymore, and we keep treating them like, well, yeah, but this is so fucking obvious that even a fucking child... No. These are fully functional adults who've trained their brains to be reprogrammable meatbags.
And when you say they, you're talking about Fox News viewers / Trump supporters.
Yes, absolutely.
But and I'm Fox, talking about...
And Fox News, it doesn't matter to Fox News. It doesn't
Fox
matter
News
to them.
Fox News itself, right.
It doesn't
okay.
matter to them. They can deny reality in the same sentence. They can
right.
tell two
okay.
completely contradictory stories. They know that their audience
yep.
are goldfish, are just mm-hmm. brain-dead fuckers who will believe anything they're told minute to minute. And if they fuck up and make a mistake and tell them something that's not true, that audience can be relied upon to pretend it never happened.
Well, so, and they'll do what they did this morning, which it's hard to shock me anymore to click on Fox News and
yeah.
see and go, oh, my God, look what they did now. But they did it. They put on a black man's, arrest record and perp walk photo. I'm not saying the right word, but... You know, it was a Willie Horton.
Right.
They put up a Willie Horton. And here's this cop murderer who is scheduled to be released on parole. He's been in prison for 25 years. Isn't it terrible they're releasing a cop murderer?
Isn't it terrible? Isn't it just terrible, Blue Gal?
You know, yeah. and that's, they found that. They went mm-hmm. out and found that.
Mm-hmm. That scary black man will blot out any memory of any contradictions.
And they'll run that 24/7, 365 through... The March for Our Lives and
yep.
any other and the prostitutes on 60 Minutes or the porn stars or whatever it is or the Playboy bunnies or mm-hmm. whoever else comes out of the woodwork, and they will run scary black man cop killer as long as they need to.
And
yep.
this is why it's important
mm-hmm.
for those of us who have. Voices, but very little power individually, but as a group, we do have a lot of power,
mm-hmm.
is this time around. These are the same people who were the Bush administration stooges.
Well, and, I was going to say, it's the reality-based community. No, we create our own reality. Right. Well, yeah, that is the blueprint, right?
And the mistake that was made after the Bush administration collapsed.
When that little
not,
window opened,
was
right?
Was not salting the fucking earth. And,
yep.
and It is impossible for me to say because nobody cares about my opinion outside of the blogosphere or the podcastosphere.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can say with absolute authority that if we could have arrested the whole Tea Party bullshit scam in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
just there were too many people in the media. There were too many Mark Halperins in the media who desperately wanted to avoid accountability for their own complicity. For their
mm-hmm.
own crimes against their profession and against democracy. And if we ever had a Truth and Reconciliation Committee, they would have to come clean about all the shit they put up with and all the shit they roll over for, all the lies they told to get George Bush everything he wanted. So when it finally turned, it became incredibly important to everyone in the Beltway media to make sure Republicans are never held accountable for anything. Because once you start tugging on the accountability rope, It eventually leads to Joe Scarborough, and it leads to David Brooks and Michael Gerson, and all those people go down, and they cannot permit that. So we're going to let use our incredible authority, our power of owning the cameras and owning the scripts and owning the studios and owning the microphones to let this lie go forward. That there's this brand new thing in the world called a Tea Party, and it has nothing to do with the Republican Party. It's a brand new group of people who just happen to love tax cuts and hate black people. But other than that, it's a completely new bunch of people. No, it's not. It's not the new. It's the same fucking people. And we were screaming this as loud as we could, and nobody wanted to hear it. Nobody. But those people are the acorns. Those were the seedlings. Those were they were allowed, instead of salting the earth and destroying the Republican Party forever, which it richly deserved, they were allowed to take root and grow.
Yep.
And they learned an important lesson.
And they were because they marched in D.C. Mm-hmm. They had the support of Glenn Beck.
And Fox News.
Because Glenn Beck was paid to support them.
And Fox News and the Koch brothers all poured money and time.
All poured money into it. Yep.
And publicity. And most importantly, they learned the same lesson all over, the lesson they learned after the Clinton administration, which is if we just fucking lie all the time as a group, we can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one to stop us. Chuck Todd's not going to stand in our way. David Gregory, are you kidding me? He'll get down on all fours and suck our dicks all day long because he is so fucking desperate to believe that the Republican Party is not the monster machine that it actually is. So the entire Beltway media is just this sham
that
is terrified of acknowledging the Republican Party is what we have always said it was. So we can do anything, whatever the fuck we do. It doesn't matter. I don't want to belabor this, but I've used the analogy before of a parent with two kids, and one's a good kid and one's a sociopath.
Right, right.
And a sociopath only enjoys getting the good kid in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent, for whatever fucking crazy reason, if the sociopath sticks up a 7-Eleven, the parent will punish both kids. Well, at some point, really quick, the sociopath learns, you mean whatever the fuck I do, you're going to punish him? That's great. That's great. Why don't I just burn down houses? Why don't I torture animals? You mean every horrible thing I do, you're going to punish the good kid along with me? And the only thing I care about in this life is watching him cry? This is awesome.
Yeah.
And that's what the media has become. It's become this completely absent parent. They're not a referee anymore. They don't keep score anymore. They're just whores. They're just fucking ratings whores.
Ratings whores. And Driftglass, to that point, the quote of the day, let me just read it to you. You guess who said it.
Oh, roll with it, baby.
Someone asked this person, do you think there was any point over the past few hours that President Trump was not going to sign the spending bill?
Mm-hmm.
And this person said, no. This is one of those big rabbit holes, this big, bright, shiny object he's tinkling out there and people scrambling about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mulvaney and others are inside the White House. They knew what the president was going to do. The president wanted to interject some theater. Is he not briefed on this? Are his people not in this process at all, that the president doesn't know what his negotiators are negotiating and agreeing to on his behalf? There is so much of the dysfunction that goes on right now out of this White House. It's absolutely pathetic when you stop and think about it. This is no way to put together the nation's budget in the first place. To hear Republicans in the House screaming about this violates conservative principles, but where was all that noise when they were doing the tax bill, which created $1.5, now over $2 trillion worth of debt? So this is what we've come to expect in this town. The next big thing that comes along, the president will be, quote, engaged, and then at the last minute say something out of whack and everybody will go scrambling. Just bake it into the process and move on. Now, who said that?
Well, this is tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Because it could literally be anybody.
Mm-hmm. Nothing in that statement, by the way, that I disagree with.
Right. That's the point. It could be Jennifer Rubin.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Bill Kristol.
Could be.
It could be Marcos Melitzis.
Could be. Yeah.
It could be Joanne Reed. And that's the point. And that's the point we're going to get to in a little bit. That the never Trumpers have become liberal bloggers.
Yep.
And the liberal bloggers have become.
Driftglass, it's Michael Steele.
Oh, of course.
It's Michael Steele.
Of course.
And it is, but it's more importantly than it just being Michael Steele on MSNBC saying that.
Uh-huh.
It is Michael Steele on MSNBC with five other panelists, including Andrea Mitchell and Craig Melvin as the host, sitting there on a screen with six dividers, and the sixth divider, I'm sorry, five people and a sixth divider. And what's in that sixth little window, Drift Glass? An empty Trump podium.
Yeah.
Because we're waiting for the president to come out.
Come on and talk to us.
And tell us how he's blaming Democrats for the fact he has to sign this terrible, terrible spending bill.
Mm-hmm.
That Mr. Mulvaney and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell all signed on to.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends his statement, Donald Trump ends his statement with, I certainly hope the Congress will give me the line item veto.
Yes, give me the veto. Give me the
As
thing.
As if Donald Trump is going to go through lines of budget text.
Yeah.
With his tremendous attention span.
I think I saw butterfly. Yeah, no, it's all a joke. Except yep. real people are going to die behind it.
Right. Right.
But it's all no, see, I would put that quote up against this quote, Blue Gal. You mind?
No, go right ahead.
You already know who this is, but pretend you don't. Because then I can surprise you, spring it on
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
6 decades, this is a quote, 6 decades of Republican overreach and corrosive causes have led to the rise of Donald Trump and a foreign policy run by John Bolton, an economy guided by Larry Kudlow, and a legal team led by conspiracy theorist Joseph DeGeneva. This was the predictable outcome of the Republican Party aligning its interests with the most cynical political operators of our time. The Atwaters, the Manafort's, Gingrich's, Rove's leveraged a weaponized media culture that reduced politics to a secularized religion and consolidated political power and material wealth in the hands of its richest donors. Who said mm-hmm. that? And what one word did I change?
Republican?
Pretty brutal.
Isn't yeah.
It? I mean, that's that. You, that
and we have to hat tip Vegas Jesse for pointing that, bringing that to our attention.
Thank yeah. you, Vegas Jesse. That came from Joe Scarborough. Lifetime Republican. The only word I changed was I changed the word my Republican Party to the Republican Party. And he said this was the predictable outcome. Yes, Joe, it was predictable. In fact, people like us absolutely predicted it. And you spent your career mocking and ignoring people like us. So if this is true for the last 60 years, let's get to the part where you were completely fucking cool with it for the last 59 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that you profited hugely by it. That you got yourself a job on television that pays, at last count, $77,000 a week. By being completely okay with this. You were given Donald Trump pointers. You were giving him free publicity. Within living memory, this was happening. And this is what I most fear, Blue Gal. This is what you and I can see happening right in front of us, is that since Donald Trump is an undeniable phenomenon,
yep,
we're just going to have a media culture with Bill Kristol and David Brooks and Joe Scarborough on one side, and the other side will be Eric Erickson and Ben Dominic and Rich Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be our political discussion. And the people who warned vehemently, who burned their bridges, who turned themselves into political pariahs, who got called traitors and monsters, who've been the outcast and unwelcome specter at the banquet for decades,
mm-hmm.
meaning liberals, will be simply written out of history.
Yep.
We will simply disappear. No one will bother. There will be no panels. There will be no place. There will be no venues in which Joe Scarborough can say shit like this. And anyone will be there to say, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is what the people that you called crazy and stupid all those fucking years
mm-hmm.
were saying all that time.
Oh, you called them the Cheetos Brigade.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this was I put on my post 10 years ago. He was talking about those liberal bloggers sitting there eating their Cheetos.
Mm-hmm.
And how wiping Cheetos on their Hanes underwear, because that's what liberal bloggers do.
Right.
Well, you know, you have a point there, Joe. And when you control the cameras,
yeah.
when you control the script, when you control the television corporations, when you control the news media, you can get away with murder like this because you can ensure that nobody, because let's face it, there's no bigger coward on television than Joe Scarborough.
Yeah.
No bigger fucking lying coward than Joe Scarborough. The last time he ever got conflicted by anyone, it was Bill Kristol. And they
shouted him right down.
They got into a screaming match over who was the bigger complicit dick sucker when it came to Donald Trump. And they finally realized that maybe they shouldn't be doing this in front of the children.
Yeah.
And they dialed it down. But there will never come a day when Joe Scarborough will ever put himself in a venue where there'll be people like you and me there to ask him actual hard questions. People like Mr. Scarborough have to figure out a way to land this plane in a way that doesn't damage them. So they need to invent a universe where on the left is Joe Scarborough and David Brooks and Bill Kristol and Michael Gerson and Brett Stevens. And on the right, Eric Erickson and Rich Lowry, et cetera. And so we need to be wiped away from we need to be wiped out completely. Our existence needs to be just denied. And as long as they control the cameras, and as I was saying, there's no bigger coward on television than Joe Scarborough.
Yeah, right.
Joe Scarborough would never permit himself actually to be face to face with someone who's actually taller than he is and can't be bullied by him and who would outshout him and who would present, you know, who would lay really inconvenient facts on the table. David Brooks won't do it. Michael Gerson won't do it. Brett Stevens won't do it. There's nobody on the right who has the balls to actually debate a real liberal in the real world, because there's nothing to debate. There's nothing left to debate. The only thing left to debate is, was your complicity a capital crime, a felony, or just a series of misdemeanors? Were you too stupid to see it? Were you too misdirected to see it? And I include people like Matthew Dowd in this list, who are still on this, you know, this quest to discover the perfect center between the people on both sides, who are obsessed with making other people make binary choices between things.
Mm-hmm.
And even Duncan Black over at Atrios got in the act yesterday going, Matthew Dowd's a fraud.
Yeah.
This guy's just a fucking fraud. He has no idea what he's talking about. He gets paid really good money by ABC News to pretend he knows nothing about politics. And that's a good job. And again, at some point in the next life or in heaven, I will get answers to the question of how exactly is it that this guy has a job?
Yeah.
Who's paying them? Who's their clout? Who's the person behind the people that we see on television who insist that these are the only voices that will be allowed in our political discussions?
Drift Class.
Yeah.
I hate the West Wing.
I know you do, Blue Gal.
You've been watching it again on Netflix.
I have.
And powering through it.
Yes.
And I come in and change clothes and leave because I can't watch it because it's porn.
It is.
It's liberal porn, and it's what people comforted themselves with when they should have been salting the earth against the Tea Party. And I do love the First Lady in that.
Sacher Channing.
Sacher Channing is a goddess.
Yes.
But other than that, I just can't watch it. And I can't watch it. Because it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy that isn't the world we live in. And it's like being starving and looking through the window at a restaurant where none of the food is real, but it all looks delicious.
Yeah.
So it's depressing to me to see it. So that's my 50-cent tour of why I hate West Wing.
we need to get the Illinois
primary results, because the primary was this week, Drift Glass.
I was going to say,
people have been asking us.
Let's move from fictional politics to actual politics.
Actual politics.
And there is a point
Let me read down the list and then you comment, because I know you have a lot of insider information today about this.
I just want to preface this by saying there is a point at which all of the bullshit and gas and nonsense you see on television intersects with the real world, and that is at the moment of election.
Yep.
When people actually go to a voting booth and actually make a decision. And that happened in Illinois this week.
And it turns out that you and I, Driftglass, here in the cornfield, live in a bellwether district.
Yeah, we are at the center of the political universe, you and I.
We really are. Uh-huh. Because we have Illinois 13, which is going to now be a battle between Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, our choice.
Yay!
The person we voted for in the primary.
Yep.
She is... you know, part of a political dynasty, I guess we could say, the Dirksens.
But she's never run for office before,
and she's very down to earth. And she will talk to anybody. Her mother is down to earth. Her supporters are just very down. Everyone that's working for her is just very accessible. She is exactly what Illinois 13, I think, reflects. She reflects that.
Yes, it is.
This is a big national race to watch.
And the reason why?
In terms of being a bellwether district. Because they're running against Rodney Davis, who is a whip for Paul Ryan and has, you know, voted against Obamacare scores of times.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost lost last time, almost, well, 4 years ago,
he almost
in the
lost,
last
yeah.
midterm.
Yeah, he won, like, the when he first ran, he won by, like, 0.03%.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a really split down the middle district. I think it's R plus three is what it supposedly is.
And it's been redrawn several times.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes,
this is a seat that has been in Republican hands since 1865.
Yeah, wow.
Continuously. If it would be like Republicans winning the mayor's race in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
It hasn't happened in living memory that anyone with a D after their name has ever occupied this seat.
And that's because this is farm country. This is conservative farm country.
And what you're hearing from the top of the ticket, from Governor Hedge Fund and from Rodney Davis, is this is not about left or right.
This is not about left or right. That's right.
I just want to unite people. I just want to find the centrist position. I want to go straight down the middle. I want to be a uniter of people, not all this divisive stuff on the left and the right.
So I'm going to read down this thing here.
Okay.
So yes, in Illinois 13, which was a very friendly Democratic primary, there were several Democratic candidates running, and the debate that was held with all of the Democratic candidates in attendance was respectful. People spoke in favor of themselves and didn't slam the other person. The party came together afterwards, and Betsy Dirksen Londrigan won fairly easily. So that was a nice thing to see in a race when we're really going to have to fight for every vote.
Uh-huh.
To see the Democratic Party come together was a good thing for this district. In Illinois 3, on the other hand, which is a safe seat.
Yeah.
Which has run, Dan Lipinski ran unopposed last time. He had a challenger because he is a conservative Democrat.
He is.
I don't think we need too many conservative Democrats in Congress, frankly, anymore. But Marie Newman challenged him. She pushed him to the left. She his positions moved left during this campaign. She was an Our Revolution candidate. She had outside money from liberal groups, because they really wanted to unseat this conservative blue dog. And I don't blame them for wanting to do that. But she came up short, I think in part because Dan Lipinski is part of a family dynasty.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of people in the district knew his dad, and, he is a legacy candidate. Also, we have open primaries in Illinois. And so people that consider themselves independent might, because this was a race for representing the district, Republicans could vote in this primary. The person running in the Republican primary is a Holocaust denier. This is the Illinois 3 Nazi guy running.
A real-life Nazi, yep.
He's been, quote-unquote, disowned by the Republican Party, although, you know, the president of the United States, so-called, thinks there are some very nice people, many, many nice people on both sides. So,
uh-huh.
But here's a Holocaust denier running against Dan Lipinski in the general election now.
Running unopposed. He ran unopposed, and he got 20,000 votes.
He ran unopposed last time. The Republicans have not run anyone, and that's why the Nazi went in and got the signatures and got to be the nominee for the Republican Party.
Uh-huh.
So it's probably time to rethink the open primary idea. If you're on the left, you might want to think about that.
Yeah.
All I can say is, you know, I would have a lot more to say about Illinois 3 if I lived in that district.
Right. Yep.
Because I would rather be represented by Dan Lipinski than a Nazi, if that's your choice.
Yeah. If these are my choices,
These are my choices.
Yeah.
But Marie Newman, made it really clear. She did not concede right away. She said, I want Dan Lipinski to have a really painful night. I want him to think about how he's voting and how he's representing this district, because as he can see, it's divided. And there's a lot of Democrats that disagree with his positions on things. So it's a loss. And as I've said many times before, it's a loss for the Our Revolution ticket. It's a loss for people on the left who wanted a more progressive candidate in that safe seat. Before elections, chop wood, carry water. After elections, chop wood, carry water.
That's right.
And that's, you're just going to have to get back to work and get back to work on other things. And the left wing of the Democratic Party, whether it was Our Revolution or other groups, did unseat three Cook County.
I think four.
Three or four, yeah.
Yeah,
Cook board County members. Seats.
Uh-huh.
Expect more of that. Because we are organized that way. I expect Betsy Dirksen-Londergan to come home a lot.
Yep.
She's going to represent the district really well. She's going to listen to her constituents. Rodney Davis does not believe in town halls. He has tele-town halls with pre-selected people that he calls out to. You can register as you have to be a constituent of his, and you have to pre-register to be in on the call, and then he selects the questions,
uh-huh.
which is, you know, not Democratic. That's not what we paid him to do. And I expect Betsy Dirksen-Londergan to not work for Paul Ryan.
Right.
Unlike our current GOP embarrassment, he will not work for Paul Ryan. Okay, she will not work for Paul Ryan. And then we had Governor Hedge Fund.
Yes, we
Rauner
did.
Was almost toppled by Jean Ives, who had her own billionaire backing her.
Uh-huh.
She was an NRA A+ rated nut job, very anti-abortion. And we need, I mean, I think the priority for anyone with a ounce of sanity in the state of Illinois knows the number one priority is to get Rauner out of office.
Yes, 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 yes.
Period. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so we nominated J.B. Pritzker, who is a billionaire, and it's a shame that we have to have two billionaires running against each other, self-financing billionaires. Mm-hmm. But what Rauner has done is destroyed the Illinois budget process, destroyed in an attempt to destroy public sector unions.
Right.
This is a Republican playbook. And he came in and said, I've got all the money in the world. I can do this. I can fund every Republican state house member's campaigns for them and buy their loyalty and destroy public sector unions, which destroys the Democrats' ability to fundraise and organize against me and my party.
Yes.
And then I'll continue to win, and Republicans will continue to win in the state. And so the only way to counter that is with a bottomless pit of money. And that's J.B. Pritzker. So we have our own billionaire running for office. I'm not as upset about him being the nominee. First of all, I knew he was going to be the nominee because I've gotten the flyers for over a year. Pritzker has worked really hard to get elected.
He really has.
More than any other candidate. He has been downstate a lot. And this is where you have to understand the geography. If you understand New York geography, you understand Springfield and Illinois geography. You've got this huge city, and then you've got the rest of the state feeling very neglected because they are not the economic engine of the state. And so when a politician... It's like living in Albany, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the government is located far away from the economic center of the state.
Right, yeah. Right. And there's conflict because of that. Mm-hmm. And so you have downstaters, those of us in Springfield and Southern Illinois. I sent you this week, Driftglass, an insulting map of Illinois,
yes.
which had, you know, heroin, more heroin, and so forth. But the southern half of Illinois was listed as basically Texas.
Yeah, it is. It is. Once you get
and
below
in some
a certain
respects, that's true.
It's a southern state below a certain longitude.
It's farm and it's white for the most part, and it's conservative.
That's Fox News as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, a lot of Fox News. So I mean, there are pockets of progressivism, like our ward is a progressive ward. But we have educated people who like sidewalks and communities in our town, in our ward. That's why we're the way we are. People live in this ward because they don't believe in white flight. I think that's safe to say.
Wouldn't you? I would agree.
That the white people that live in this ward believe in integration. They believe in public schools, and they believe in equality. And they walk the talk.
They believe in the West Wing, Blue Gal.
Okay, enough. Stop. So, yes, we need campaign finance reform again. Yes, we need to get the money out of politics. And yes, we need to get Bruce Rauner out of office. And Rauner is the urgent problem. Money is the chronic problem. And we need to get to both of them. But we don't need handicapped kids waiting for a state budget while we figure out how to get the money out of politics.
Yeah.
The chronic problem has to be resolved electorally immediately.
And now is the time to do that.
Yep. One more thing.
Sure.
Apparently word has gotten out that Governor Rauner's wife has whispered to the wrong people and has noted that she and her husband are moving to Italy if he loses the election.
Yeah. I can't say that she said exactly this. We're going to get out of this shithole.
No, she didn't say we're going to get out of this shithole. But, but I will tell you that, like Stormy Daniels, the idea that a governor's wife would plan to move out of state hits a loud bell much more effectively than any conversation you might have about SEIU politics.
Yes, indeed. Okay? Absolutely.
So there are people who will take an affront to that and be angry about that and glom onto that as their reason for voting against him, that are also voting against him for all these other reasons they can't explain.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have more to say about this.
I do.
I give you the mic.
Well, thank you. And that was an excellent political summary. You and I should do a show on the local National Public Radio station where we drink tea and talk about the middle road where people want to live. This is a really good time for that, because while J.B. Pritzker did just roll to victory pretty handily and spent an enormous amount of time, just like you said, downstate, listening to people, talking to people, meeting with them one-on-one, actually doing politics.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Hedge Fund outspent his opponent, Ives, 26-1.
Whoa.
And she still came within 3 points of kicking his ass.
Yeah.
And she came within that narrow, narrow margin by declaring him unfit to be governor. And she got the National Review to run articles on the least fit governor in America, and he has no business being a governor of a state, period, because of the abortion bill he signed.
Yep.
And there's history there. And the history is that Bruce Rauner spent a shit ton of money buying the Republican Party in Illinois and swore them to a blood oath that they would support him in the budget fight, that no matter what happened, we're solidly together, we're just going to keep squeezing the state until we break the Democratic Party. And that was the plan. I'll get into office. I won't pass a budget. I'll refuse to pass a budget. I'll bankrupt the state if I have to, but we will, by God, get rid of these goddamn unions and cut taxes for everybody, because that's what Republicans do. And then after it got to be too much, because local politicians have to go home to their neighborhoods and talk to their neighbors who are saying, why are you cutting off funding for kids with autism?
Yeah.
Why are you cutting off...
My grandchild has autism. That was a big one.
Sure shit was. Why are you cutting off funds for my mom's home health care services?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get to live in the billionaire bubble with Bruce Rauner.
Mm-hmm.
He could pay all their expenses, but he couldn't actually take them in his borders. So they actually had to live with their constituents. Their constituents were really, really pissed off that 2 years had gone by and nothing had been done. No budget had been passed. That bills were piling up. And so enough of them broke ranks with Bruce Rauner to get a budget passed.
In tears.
Yeah.
There were literally Republicans crying on the floor of the State House.
Snowflakes. All fucking snowflakes.
Yep.
So they were crying and weeping, and they sold their souls and passed a budget, which is really the only thing a state does.
The overrode Governor Hedgepeth's veto of the budget, right?
And that at that point, common wisdom down here suggests that he just said, well, fuck you, all bets are off.
Mm-hmm.
Because he promised them he would veto this abortion bill and this pro-choice bill. He promised, I believe, the Cardinal of Chicago or the Bishop of Chicago publicly that he would veto the bill. When it came to his desk, he signed it.
Yep.
And he said, screw it. I don't care. You guys betrayed me. I paid for this party, sir.
I bought
this party, sir. And you all were supposed to do what I tell you to do. The day after the tax bill broke against him, that's the day he fired his whole staff, practically.
Yeah, yeah.
And replaced them with, you know, hardcore right-wing stooges. And that's what he decided, look, signing a pro-choice bill might piss off you assholes downstate, but it'll make my neighbors in the suburban area, who actually don't care about that, who think you're all nuts down here, and the trade-off is worth it. So he came within a hair of losing to a right-wing crackpot who he outspent 26-1. That says weakness. That screams political weakness.
Yep.
And that's true up and down the ticket. And that's quite independent of the blue wave that's coming for them this fall.
Yeah, right.
And what happens now that you have two billionaires running at the top of the ticket, J.B. Pritzker is completely self-funded, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
Which means all the money that's coming to the Democratic Party is going to go down ticket.
And that's a good thing, in part because I don't think J.B. Pritzker has coattails.
No, I don't think he does.
Yeah. I think people are voting against Rauner and not necessarily – I mean, J.B.'s done a good job at making the argument for him.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think people are focused on that because Rauner is so bad.
Well, and what this lets them do is there is no Democratic Party in southern and central Illinois really,
at all
to speak of. The party apparatus is completely gone to shit.
Yep.
There are Democrats who win. There are Democratic aldermen who win. But there's no Democratic Party apparatus to speak of.
Right.
Pritzker would like to rebuild the apparatus for getting people elected downstate with that money that's not going to go to his election, which I think is a very good idea. But the ugly truth is that if you want to, you know, it takes a thief to catch a thief. It takes a monster to kill a monster. Only a good billionaire can stop a bad billionaire, Miguel. And that's the sad truth. And until we have really comprehensive campaign finance reform. But politics is about two things. It's about money and votes.
Yep.
And the turnout at the midterm was pretty impressive. Republicans turned out at 70%. Of what they turned out in 2014, which is...
So they were down 30%.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Democrats turned out 200% more than they turned out in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Now, millennials still have work to do. Apparently, their turnout just sucked. But up and down the ticket, it was a big fucking deal. And that's the thing. That's what to watch in Illinois. And it all really does boil down to Illinois 13, our district.
Yeah.
Where you have a legacy Republican candidate trying to be a bipartisan centrist in the age of Trump, and the guy who was the whip in the House for taking health care away from children, and then having a beer to celebrate.
Yep.
Against a woman who is from a political family, who has deep roots in the community, and who's running on health care and jobs.
And, Drew Klass, I want to add the millennial problem isn't a problem for millennials.
No.
It's a problem for us because the barriers to college students voting at the place where they go to school is dampening to turnout.
Yeah.
And if you want to have vote by mail and allow it to be forwarded to where you can register and vote by mail on campus as an absentee and make that easy. Now, voting, registering to vote in Illinois is easy. You if you have a driver's license, you can register to vote online. So, and that is not voter ID, okay? That is just, we need to make sure online that you are who you say you are.
Right.
So the Secretary of State says if you have a driver's license, then we already have a record of who you are and where you live. Mm-hmm. So we will put, you know, we will cross-check our driver's license record online for you so you can register to vote. That's a courtesy.
Yeah.
So that, and that makes it easy to register if you have a driver's license. And if you go in for a driver's license, of course, Motor Voter is there. And Illinois, I think, is really good about being proactive about that. The person getting you your driver's license, I know this because Junior Dude got his driver's license, actually says to you, now, do you want to register to vote at the same time? And makes it not you have to ask. It's no, we're handing you the paperwork to do that. So,
well, and I can include three more fast facts. Then we'll move
sure.
on to Cambridge Analytica. First, in Illinois, Bruce Reiner's job approval is actually lower than Donald Trump's.
Yeah, approval, that doesn't surprise
me
at all.
Which is kind of amazing.
Yeah,
because it's but
it's it impacts their lives more.
It really does.
Yeah.
Secondly, TV attack ads, you know, those things you see on TV, actually do work.
Yes,
in
they
the,
do.
In the demographic 55 to 74, they actually do work. They don't boost your turnout, but they do depress your opponent's turnout.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a battle of titans who can sort of bury the others. And the third is you're going to see a lot more outside PACs spending money in this election. Money that you won't be able to see, you won't be able to track, money that's going to go on to Facebook ads and so on and so forth. But there are there's some serious right-wing nut job PACs who are at work in Illinois. And so there's this mix of everything, the shifting demographics, big money, this blue wave, and all the other factors that are at play in individual places all over the country are all sort of coming to a head right here in our backyard. And I must say, we're going to take a small amount of credit for giving Betsy Dirksen Lonergan the pro-left bump. I'm not going to say we got her elected. I'm saying that we helped. A little bit.
Well, I was eating that blue wave pussy hat that I have up at Twitter that now has 1,774 retweets and 7,586 likes as of this speaking.
and one of these days, Tammy Duckworth is going to have a beautiful baby.
Yes, she is. And she has a sweater that
I knit for her.
Yes.
That was delivered through channels.
Through channels.
Through people we know who know people. So you'll probably see Baby Duckworth.
Baby Duckworth will have a baby sweater knit by Blue Gal. So isn't that nice?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah.
They.
After you, Blue Gal. You're on a roll. You go right ahead.
Cambridge Analytica got James O'Keefe, except no one edited the video.
Yeah, there's the difference. Oh, except they weren't lying. Yeah.
They weren't lying. And no one on the right can cry foul because the NPR guys got fired for saying the Tea Party was racist on hidden camera.
And
they were right.
And
Cambridge Analytica got nailed for saying, oh, yeah, we put prostitutes in candidates' hotel rooms.
And we liked it.
And we, you know, and made it work. We'll do whatever we need to do to win. Because what? Because you represent people who have no ideas. Nothing anyone can vote for, so the only way the Republican Party can win elections is to cheat.
I must disagree with one thing here, though.
Yeah.
The part of the sentence that says no one on the right can. Of course they can.
Oh, of course they can.
I refer you to our previous discussion about doublethink and Orwell. They don't remember.
Except the Dirk Glass. Excuse me. I'm going to interrupt you and say...
Please.
No one on the right on Fox News is even talking about Cambridge Analytica.
Oh, no. That's the way
they deal with it. And no one is talking about Stormy Daniels. And Stormy Daniels' lawyers hasn't been invited at all. This is really important. Has not been invited to be on Fox and goes on every other cable news network and says, by the way, I haven't been invited on Fox. I wonder why.
It's kind of cool.
That's the crossing of the streams that we have to demand.
Right.
Fox News has to become the story.
Right. And they are.
And that gets us back to what I was asking about. What happens when reality bends and it's Donald Trump saying, oh, no, I agree with Lou Dobbs.
Uh-huh.
Fox News then becomes the story. You have to talk about Donald Trump tweeting out policy that comes from Lou Dobbs. Donald Trump hiring Fox News anchors and pundits as his personal attorney and his national security advisor. You have to Fox News then becomes the story.
Yeah, well, Fox News has been the story on the left for a really long time.
Among left-wing bloggers, yes, and Media Matters and all of us writing about it all the time. But on cable news, it's not. Jill Wine Banks this week, one of the pins that she wore was faux news.
Uh-huh.
And MSNBC's, you know, department of how to make people look on TV moved that pin up to her shoulder so you didn't see it on camera.
Uh-huh.
And I get it why they might do that. I get that there needs to be a certain modicum of professional courtesy with fellow cable news outlets, but the gloves have to come off where it comes to Fox News.
Yes.
And it has to a certain extent. Chris Hayes now just calls it Trump TV.
Yep.
And he doesn't hesitate to call it that.
Well, and that takes us to another topic if you want to go.
What's that?
That takes us to our next topic, actually.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Which is, as I referenced earlier, Matthew Dowd and the New Year Zero.
Yeah, and let's finish up with this quickly, because you have a whole post on this, right?
I do. And it's a very simple idea, and it's just an idea that everyone who listens to this already knows about, and everyone who reads my blog or Chris Lars already knows about, which is that every few months or so, every year or so, the Beltway media and the right has to reset the clock at the point at which history began.
Yep.
So after George Bush was appointed president by 5 conservative Supreme Court justices and jettisoned every conservative idea he ran on, we needed to pretend that Bill Clinton never happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the year zero was the year 2000. And then it became, and after George Bush killed everything he touched and ruined an entire country, ruined a couple of countries, bankrupted the country, fucked up everything, and the Republicans had to eat that. The minute Barack Obama was elected, the New Year Zero began January 20th, 2009.
Yep.
And nothing existed before that. There was no history. There was no discussion. There was no recognition that what Obama spent 6 years doing was digging us out of the disaster that Bush created. No acknowledgement of that at all. They could start off fresh and say, everything begins new today, and Barack Obama is a Kenyan usurper who's trying to kill us all. And get away with it. And never have to contrast their actions with what they said before, because there is no before. Well, now, if you pay very close attention, the new year zero is Donald Trump's election.
Yeah, Donald Trump coming down the escalator.
That's the new year.
Yeah.
And if you can read it on, I don't know, half a dozen op-ed editorials, all by conservatives, all saying that 2 years ago, 2 years ago, the Republican Party just lost its mind for some reason. 2 years ago, everything went to shit. 2 years ago, Donald Trump corrupted the Republican Party. And there's no one allowed within a million miles of these people with a microphone as big as theirs or with a column as big as theirs to say, no, Donald Trump is the emergent, logical, emergent property of the party you created. You built him.
Well, that's what Joe Scarborough said in his column today, though.
Yes, he did. That fascinated me because there has to be someone on the other side of this argument.
Yep.
And the other side of this argument, if you want to preserve the Beltway power structure, the other side of this argument has to be another Republican.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you're going to reset the clock again as soon as Donald Trump's out of office.
Oh, yeah. The minute he gets out of office.
Oh, reasonable, sane Republicans have taken over the party now. We're back to normalcy.
And I'm an independent.
And Jeff Flake is going to take us onward and upward or whatever.
I never supported Donald Trump. I never voted for him. I thought he was, you know, crazy. But liberals are just as bad. Remember how bad Hillary was?
Yeah.
Remember those emails? Remember Benghazi? Remember what choice did I have? I had no choice. She was a monster. How is anyone to know that Donald Trump was going to be bad?
Yeah.
And then the media will just shrug its shoulders, turn their backs, unless they are forced to do otherwise. This is the important point.
Yeah.
The way the media behaves is not a law of nature. If you focus your attention, make life so incredibly uncomfortable for media executives that they have to acknowledge that you're there and that you have a thing to say and that it should be said on their air and that their people are fucking liars.
Yep.
But that's on us. We have
that's
to
on
stop
us.
Scattering our forces and focus on making the center go away.
Well, and it's as long as we are focused on issues like sexual harassment in the workplace, healthcare, the environment, and saying the Republican Party is responsible for what is wrong with those issues, we'll make it. But you have to focus on issues that people can glom onto and recognize. And I really don't have a problem with a person of quote-unquote average intelligence not following this stuff obsessively like we do.
Yeah, of course. They shouldn't have to.
No, that's exactly right. We should live in a safe enough democracy that you don't have to wake up every morning going, oh, God, what did the president so-called tweet today? That should not, that is not and should not be normal.
But what should be normal is the need to pay deep and close and constant attention to issues and people in power is the responsibility of a free and fair press.
Exactly. Exactly.
And the media, and as long as Matthew Dowd is out there saying, you know, both sides are equally wrong. Both
and getting
sides
a paycheck
bad,
from a network to do so.
Then the people who don't pay attention to politics, who only tune in once in a while, will see that and say, well, I guess both sides suck.
Yeah.
I guess there's no difference between the two. I guess they're equally awful. I mean, what does it even matter if I vote?
And that's how you get back to John Bolton getting a seat in the National Security Council.
Yes. And the National Security
Advisor.
If
you want to stop that, if that scares the shit out of you, which it should, the way you have to stop that in its infancy.
Right.
I think that's your point, isn't it?
That is exactly my point.
You've
got to
stop it by saying, if you have an R after your name, you supported traitors. That's
and you will and
never
you need to
again.
Pay. And if you have, if you are in the media and you have built a career out of lying to your readers and listeners and viewers and telling them that there's no difference, that the corrupt duopoly is equally bad on both sides.
That there's no difference between Hillary Clinton and John Bolton.
That this is on you.
Yeah.
You did this. And by fucking God, we are coming for you.
We are coming for you. The New York Times and the Washington Post had contractual obligations to publish excerpts from Clinton Cash.
Yep. Which is a lie.
We're coming for you.
We're coming for you. And we know where you, we know who you are and we know what you do.
We know who you are and we're coming for you. Hey, Drift Class.
Yes,
each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Jack. Jack is a no-nonsense, beautiful tomcat who started out as a rescue kitten with a small chunk of ear missing and such a beautiful coat. He likes to play fetch. He talks to humans in a chirpy little language because it's what you humans understand. So I'm going to talk to you this way. You go visit Jack. He's really beautiful at our Facebook page and website. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And think about that. How much does that cost? About $4.50, $5, somewhere in there. $5 is a decent donation to give us.
Yeah.
If that's what you can afford. Some people can afford more, and we really appreciate those bigger donations. But if you've never given before, we really would like you to consider giving $5. It makes a difference for us and our budget. And if you're already buying coffee for yourself every once in a while, you can afford it. And this is not charity. This is our job. We do this for you. Feel free to chip in $5. We would appreciate it. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. We have PayPal, GoFundMe, Patreon, and a postal address where you can just mail a check and say, here. Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Hey, just to be on the safe side, the Internet Kitties never congratulate anybody.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2018, DGBG Productions Incorporated.